Discover how you can gain a competitive advantage by quickly unlocking data insights with Lenovo AI solutions, creating more business value ethically and responsibly. With Lenovo as a trusted partner, their AI solutions bring the data where and when you need it the most, from the pocket to the cloud. Visit lenovo.com/AI to learn more.
Women in HPC is actually an official collaboration partner with ISC 24. So it's big for us and it's big for our members and allies. So it's great. The goal of Women in HPC is really about lifting up women and underrepresented groups, making sure they have the right exposure, giving them opportunity to network, to learn technical skills. Many times, if you look not only at the types of products they're producing, but the types of people they have on board, you'll find that the winning groups or the people that are really progressing things have a mix of people from different types of backgrounds, different ages, different races, the whole bit.
From Orion X in association with Inside HPC, this is the At HPC podcast. Join Shaheen Khan and Doug Black as they discuss supercomputing technologies and the applications, markets, and policies that shape them. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the At HPC podcast. I'm Doug Black of Inside HPC, and with me is Shaheen Khan of Orion X. Hey, Shaheen.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So today we have a great guest. We have Christine Merritt. She is Chief Marketing Officer at Alsys Flight, which is a UK-based advanced computing and HPC class systems integrator and service provider. She is also a leader of the Women in HPC organization, where her official title is Business Manager. Do I have that right, Christine?
And yes, welcome. That's correct. Hi. Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Great. So glad you could be with us today. And, you know, in the run-up to ISC, we were hoping you could give us an overview of the goals and missions of the Women in HPC organization. How long has it been in existence, its growth and membership and influence?
Oh, well, absolutely. This is a big deal in the run-up to ISC because the biggest news of all is that Women in HPC is actually an official collaboration partner with ISC 24. So it's big for us and it's big for our members and allies. So it's great. Women in HPC was founded a little over 10 years ago up at the University of Edinburgh. It was a bunch of people up there one day sitting down at a table at lunch, asking themselves the question of why there aren't more women in the field of high performance computing. And it has grown from there. In some cases, you would refer to as exploded. Tony Collis and Allison Kennedy, they were our founders. And they started with just some workshops and things. And now Women in HPC has, and I actually counted this morning, 28 chapters and affiliates. The only official continent we do not have anyone on yet, and so now we have something to work towards, is Africa. But so we've got US, Central South America, EU, Asia, Australia, New Zealand, all over the place. And the goal of Women in HPC is really about lifting up women and underrepresented groups, making sure they have the right exposure, giving them opportunity to network, to learn technical skills. And it happens through our chapters and affiliates. And then we get to do twice a year, we host two big global events at the ISC and SC conferences where we do gigantic networking and presentations and things like that. So that's Women in HPC in a nutshell.
Okay. And tell us about your role as business manager. What does that mean? And what are the responsibilities of some of the other leaders of the group?
I'm the money. I have a really weird background. I actually started out in grassroots fundraising. So those skills come in handy for organizations such as Women in HPC. So I help fundraise for the large global events, as well as, and I'm very proud of this, we've been able to launch our travel fellowships where we have, last year we sent four people, so two to ISC, two to SC, and this year we've got two more wonderful speakers to we're sending to ISC. So yeah, we do that, the networking, the swag. I raise kind of money for that. I also am the graphic designer for Women in HPC. So the design is mine. So if you hate it, you can blame me. If you love it, you can love me. It's fine. We have actually it's a growing exec board. We were, like many other organizations, we got the pandemic put a lot of pressure on people. And so we didn't have a lot of exec board members, but we actually have communications. We have a research director. someone who runs the chapters and affiliates. We've got mentorship and we've got advisory. So that's like the roles. Oh, we have our treasurer too, George, who looks after our funds and at the EPCC up in Edinburgh. So that's great. The thing is, there is also like your pipeline of emerging execs and things like that. And we have people who organize our events on the ground, workshops, conferences outside of ISC and SC. So we've had people pull entire events together for SC Asia, PERC, and a little conference in the UK called CI UK up in Manchester, just to name a few things where there are people involved.
Hey, Kristen, I'm sure there are hundreds of volunteers here, but you also need some funding to get things done. Where does the funding come from and how would people go about helping you with that?
Oh, well, you've asked the right person. So we fundraise all year round. In fact, we're hoping to do our very first ever full-on report out on everything we've done and all the money that we've raised and where that money has gone to throughout last year, 2023. But anybody can donate. We actually have a donate to us page, like a little button on womeninhpc.org. So if you want to do an individual contribution, but you can also contact us at info@womeninhpc.org if you're interested in doing sponsorships, which is generally how our funding comes in, and that we raise in three ways. We have a champions program where if someone wants to give us like an agreed amount of money towards an agreed project, such as Travel Fellows, they can become a Women in HPC champion, who this year is Do It Now. And or you can donate or support our conference events. So ISC has a host of supporters who are putting money towards our networking, our swag events, and all of them always agree that anything we got left over can roll over into other projects. So those are just ways we get funding. We have a fundraising target of about 80,000 British pounds because the accounts are held in the UK that we try to pull in, and that covers everything plus some ideas that we've got in the pipeline that we'd love to get off the ground, such as a podcast. So yeah, we are looking to try to expand a little bit into our community.
Excellent.
Now, looking at this year's ISC, you mentioned that you're an official partner collaborator with the conference. Give us an idea for people interested in the events you're holding during the conference and the swag. I know you've been talking about that. Could give us some highlights of what's coming up.
Well, first of all, I need to thank the ISC 24 team for approaching us to do an official collaboration partnership. We've worked with them. We started this before ISC 23, just so you know. The conversation and making sure we did this right has been more than a year in the making. And the funny thing about this is the actual collaboration came up together because we were rejected from the workshops at ISC. And so we all had our panic. Everyone has a panic. And the ISC team came to us with an idea, which was the start of our collaboration partnership and is actually the cornerstone of this year's ISC, which is they let us take over the Solutions Forum, which is on the exhibitor floor that happens during the exhibition gala. And we put together a program of really short talks. These are both technical and career focused, so a bit of each. And the community's response was so insanely positive that they went, we have to do something official. This needs to be official. This needs to be written down. And we started to pull together the Solution Forum takeover. The Women in HPC posters, which were a fringe event, are now part of the main event. We also have a BOF on mentorship that Jay Lofsted is putting together. He's the guy who's running the Women in HPC mentorship scheme for this year. And we also have a diversity day, which is where the swag comes into play. So we'll have shirts, which will be at the Solution Forum takeover and with some of our supporters. Actually, Inside HPC has just posted our press release. So the whole link of everybody who's going to have something is online. But we've got shirts, we've got stickers, we've got pins, lanyards, and these things they call snoods here in the UK because the UK likes to call things different. In the US, you call them a buff, or some people just like call them a neck gaiter. So that's the joy of trying to be international. So those are going to be available and people like to snap those up and wear them. People like to bring stuff from prior years, or they'd want to wear something from a group or community that they are a part of. And that is really the idea, is to flood awareness into our community about all the wonderful people we have in high performance computing.
You mentioned just the positive response that you're getting, this is a good time to ask really about the quality of that positivity. Because as we all know, when you're trying to lead such a transformation, you certainly go through a period where everybody intellectually gets it or sees the benefit of participating without actually doing anything. Are we getting to a point where people truly grok it and actually are trying to move the needle in a real way? Or yes. Are we still sort of going through the motions?
No, you said the word move the needle, which is great. What a lovely setup. So that is actually a really good question, because the idea behind the quote-unquote box-ticking exercise of we have a female on our board, or we have a certain 10% of our staff is female, or something really strange like that, is one of those risks that you run into when you talk about diversity and inclusion, especially in the field of tech in general. And there's a lot of studies, and usually if you go to the wonderful people at various statistical groups, they get up and they say, oh, there's been studies and we don't have the skills, we don't have the diversity, we don't have this, we don't have that, everything's doom and gloom, right? So Alsa's Flight, the people I work for as part of our support of women in HPC, they threw some time and money basically behind me and they said, what is happening? We need to go back to our community, because the HPC community, they love data. They don't like to buy on to what I call like marketing sound bites. They'll rip those apart. So it was Kristen, go find out what people are doing to move the needle towards actually doing things in this field. Because not only is it finding out about it, there's a number of people who come to the Women in HPC events who say, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do that's real? And so there's some stuff that we've learned. So Move the Needle is a 12-month like fixed project where we are doing two things. We're gathering knowledge. So I've got tons and tons of interviews, and I'll make sure you guys have the link to the Move the Needle site, that are coming down the pipe of people actively working to impact positive change within the technical community. So that's one side. Then the second side is that 10 people have willingly signed up to be accountable for various goals, specifically around diversity and inclusion, for the next 12 months, and to tell me the truth, to tell each other the truth about what it really takes to move the needle. So there's two sides to this story, which is, you know, we can get all the research we want, but I was like, let's see what we can do in real time. And the team, which we call the accountability or A team, we met last month. And the coolest thing is that I was able to distill out of an hour conversation. I actually wrote down, I have six things that I've learned so far on this, is this diversity and inclusion thing real? So do you want me to fire them at you? You can ask me questions about
them. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Here we go. So the first thing I've learned about anything diversity inclusion wise, and by the way, I actually say you could apply this to projects in general, is the size and age of your organization will determine how fast you can pivot or experiment on this kind of stuff. That's the first thing I've learned.
What does that mean in practical terms?
Practical terms. Alsa's Flight. We are less than 100 employees. We can move very quickly with change. If we want something to happen, it can go, what, you know, they call it the handshake thing. Like in order to get something done, you have to introduce yourself to a certain number of people. And the more people you have to shake hands with, the harder it is to spread this message down the pipe. So we can move fairly quickly on implementing a type of change. We can do stuff without having to run through a lot of legal hurdles that you would probably get into if you are a corporate organization. So if you're a really large corporate and somebody comes in and says, we want to change the culture, which is basically what you're doing with the diversity and inclusion, you're going to have a lot of people that you're going to have to work through in order to find out how feasible it is and how much change you can actually put in. So it's hard because it's very personal and individual, because when you say, oh, you know, we would like to see more diversity in the field of HPC, it may be for a smaller organization such as Alsa's to do something about it faster than if you've got a multi-global organization with different cultures you have to take into an account, different legal rules you have to take into account, different ways of working you have to take into account. So those are the kind of things I don't think always get exposed at the front, because some people will sit around and immediately they'll poo it and they'll shut it down and say, well, I can't do that. And it's like, well, you may not be able to do it at your organization, but maybe you can do something personally to change that.
From predictive maintenance and manufacturing loss prevention in retail, to credit risk optimization in finance, AI is transforming how we live and work. Organizations of all sizes are rethinking and restructuring their businesses using Lenovo AI solutions. Lenovo takes AI from the realm of research and into the real world by simplifying the adoption process with optimized infrastructure and pre-validated solutions. From the pocket to the cloud, Lenovo provides AI for all. Visit lenovo.com/AI to learn more.
So the size part I get, that if you're a big organization, obviously there's a lot more to really move it. The age part is more puzzling for me because I would say that it's more about the culture of an organization and whether change and transformation is ingrained or whether, you know, historical perspective rules the day, and or you think there's actually, like it or not, there's a correlation.
I think actually you probably are saying it better, because when I was jotting down some of the stuff that I'd picked up on, I noticed that in the accountability group, when they talked about the problems within the organization, they often would reference how long the organization had been there. And because you're right, if it's been around a long time, a certain type of culture may have gotten in, right? And so what I loved what they said, we have a problem externally facing. They said that people are turned away by us because we've been around so long that there is a certain way that people see us. It was sort of like them saying, you know, we've got a great personality, you just need to get to know us. And it's like, I see why you're having problems. So like, you know, okay, I get it. And so I think, like, how long you've been around, the type of culture you have, if it is established and it's been established for years and years, that you come, like, one of the problems in tech industry that I see here in the UK is they will say, we want a Russell Group graduate. Russell Group is like Ivy League in the US, right? You want a straight A student, a first degree here in the UK. And all of a sudden, your pool is suddenly shrunk, first of all. And then the second thing that's happened on top of this is that there's a certain way people are indoctrinated into the wonderful world of tech, and there are certain ways of doing things. So suddenly, you're not only shrinking your pool, you're also shrinking the way you solve a problem. So you're not coming in with multiple directions, right? So if you've been around for years, and I mean, there are companies that do only hire from certain universities or from certain backgrounds, that's a big change that you're throwing in. So that's what I mean by that, I guess. So like how long you've been around, the type of culture you have, how long that culture has been around, you know, and it starts from the top. Because the second thing, gosh, I feel like I'm talking forever. Second thing is the leadership. They have to own this. This cannot be something that you stand around and say, oh, that's nice. The leaders need to own it and they need to do it. If they establish goals, they need to be part of that solution, even if it's this part of the solution belongs to me. Such as one of the things that we discussed is if C-level folks, if they have that availability, if they should go to hear some of their early career people speak, like, you know, these little tiny things that can change how people see their leaders is if they show up at their, you know, their little presentation, which they thought nobody was going to come to, and therein comes the bigwig in the room. It's going to make all the difference in the world over people who are coming up into the field, over them not showing that level of potential care or respect for the incoming generation of leaders in the field. So that's just one example. But the other things too is just simply the leaders asking for those people to report regularly on those types of goals, or being involved in the formation of certain types of policies. That's the kind of stuff that's going to make or break. Because if it's just like the leader saying, oh, we've written a pamphlet, well, that's that then. That's setting it aside. But if the leader says, ah, we've written this thing about hiring, so I need to go to this training to make sure that I'm not accidentally throwing up barriers or blocking somebody from, you know, proceeding in an interview, then I'm up for it. That's where the difference lies.
Right, right.
Yep. That's two. Okay. And in our second hour, we will discuss. So the representation side of it is actually, and before we press play on this or record, we were talking a lot about the women in HPC title and how I even said having women in our title can be considered a barrier, because there's this feeling of, oh, it's a girls group. And with like ISC changing the narrative and putting us on the floor, people were seeing the fact that we were actually talking about careers, and then we were turning around and talking, you know, having just technical discussions, and people saw for what we were, which was a group of people who are genuinely interested in hearing about new ideas from people of different backgrounds and discussing some of the more thorny topics, such as working or networking through your career or negotiating a raise and things like that, stuff that people didn't realize, right? So when I say the words representation, it means that it's better to have everyone in the room. So if there's a women's group, you immediately think, if you're a, you know, a white male, let's just say, oh, I'm not supposed to be there. The answer is actually no, we need you in the room because we want you to hear our stories and we want you to ask us questions and work with us so that we can come up with solutions. So that's what the other thing I've learned, alongside of a really important thing, which is if you set a goal in this space, please make sure it is realistic. HPC, we're a technical group of people. We want to solve something with code and it needs to be, you know, it's very binary. And when you're dealing in diversity and inclusion, you need to be able to review and amend and change and be cool with that. I've seen a lot of stuff get tossed to the side because it's an all or nothing scenario. You know, that was one of the things that we as an accountability group discussed. Thankfully, that nobody was crazy and picked some ridiculous thing that they wanted to achieve. But they, in fact, we had discussions with people who picked too many goals. And we said, let's go with three. And we helped them figure out what three goals they wanted, right? So those are the kind of things that are important. The other two was there needs to be some kind of investment, either time or money. I was at an event where they called volunteering side of desk job, which I thought was an awesome way of saying I'm doing this for free. On top of all the other things I'm supposed to do. It's a side of desk job. I'm like, that's such a nice way of saying I'm doing this in my spare time for no money or recognition. There has to be some level of investment and there needs to be some level of outcome or accountability. Because if you say you want to do something, I don't know, like in the mystical field, we like to put it out into the universe. That's nice, but you actually have to do something about it. And that's the kind of stuff I've learned so far. And actually looking at where people are really actively moving the needle in diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility inside HPC and AI.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Kristen, I'd love for us to just go through the six again in just like bullet form, just as a way of reminding everybody what they just listened to.
Okay. Number one, the size and potential age and culture of your organization will determine how fast you may be able to implement new change or pivot or even experiment with change. That's number one. Number two, your leaders or leadership needs to own whatever goals or plans that you set forward in some way, shape, or form. Number three, representation means absolutely everyone and not one specific group of people. That's a problem that got us into this issue in the first place. Let's just put it that way. Number four, please, whatever goals or aims you set, let them be realistic. Open them to review, open them to being amended. That's not a problem. Number five is investment is key. And this is either time or money, preferably both, where people are saying, I am giving you this. This is not something you do in addition to your job. It is something you do as part of your job, which has actually been an issue for a long time with things actually getting implemented, which is, whenever I can get around to that, right? And when you make it an actual investment, it's a totally different deal. And then finally, there needs to be an outcome from whatever you do. And if necessary, having like an A team, like accountability team that gets together and supports each other through these types of initiatives is, I think, super key in actually not only moving the needle forward, but having real conversations about where things work and where things don't. And we often like to only talk about success. Who doesn't love to talk about success? But I am always up for people talking about stuff not working. And that's okay. Right. We need to have those conversations. There's learning there. If everything's always perfect and wonderful, and then you wonder why we're still stuck at 20% representation for women in HPC, right? Why are we still stuck? And it's because maybe we need to talk about the stuff that isn't working.
Right on. Excellent. Thank you. I think that was very useful.
Thank you.
Kristen, for those who aren't completely, I guess, current with this whole issue, beyond the obvious right and wrong of stronger presence of underrepresented groups in HPC, can you talk to the business reason? So you're talking to CEO of HPC XYZ Corp. And just from a business perspective, why should this be important to that business leader?
Well, I mean, there's some interesting things that's happened that you can actually point to outside of why should we have women or more underrepresentation or whatever within the field of high performance computing. And that's just to look at what happened because of COVID And people began to see the real side, you know, people's personal lives, which were walled up and kept separately. All those barriers had to come down, right? So we began to see the impact of working from home. We began to see the impact of flexible working. We began to see that a lot of these organizations, which already had these things in place or already had these types of mixes in power, how they were able to not survive and thrive within these kind of spaces. I think, you know, I got into it when I talked about the hiring plans and the narrowing of focus. When you diversify looking at solving a problem, whether it is by adding a woman or someone from a minority group or someone like myself, I am an unabashed, very proud to say, classical archaeology major. I have a grassroots fundraising background. I should by no means, way, shape, or form be in tech, but I've always loved tech. I've always loved talking about tech. And that's the kind of stuff that I bring to the table, is this kind of quasi fascination with like the history and why people do the things they do, which is part of a classics background training. And those are the kind of things that I think people don't overlook, and they wonder why. Oh, why are we stalling, or why are we falling behind company X or company Y? And many times, if you look not only at the types of products they're producing, but the types of people they have on board, you'll find that the winning groups or the people that are really progressing things have a mix of people from different types of backgrounds, different ages, different races, the whole bit. And those are the ones that are tearing off ahead. And if you look at the ones who are like always hiring from the same pool, always have the same types of people working in a job, those are the kind of groups that have a tendency to start to stagnate. They have a moment of greatness. They all do. I mean, you can track companies within technology and within HPC that had their moment in the sun. And then you're like, why are they in decline? And sometimes you can turn and look at it, and there's usually more than one factor in play. Let's just be honest with you. But sometimes you can just look at their leadership or how people have clung to their jobs when they should have retired or something like that. There's this element that people would rather want to stare at a chip, or they want to stare at a rack design, or they want to stare at their type of cooling or chiller doors or whatever and say, was it this? And turns out maybe that was a contributing factor, but it's surprising how much the people matter in those types of things.
Yeah, I got a take on this, Doug. One way to think about this is in terms of alignment and diversity. Alignment is good. Diversity is good. And it's easier to achieve alignment if you eliminate diversity, because then it's essentially, you know, cloning the same person. So that's a good thing in terms of getting alignment. But God forbid you have to do something other than what you're good at. Then you're completely hosed in a way that you cannot recover from. If on the other hand, you've got diversity without alignment, then you could have chaos. You could be very agile, but not in an aligned way. So the trick is to get both of those right. And they're not incompatible. That's really the point, that you can have the cake and eat it too, but you need to have a different approach. You need to be a little bit more inclusive. You need to recognize what is needed to get the best out of every member of the team and actually consider it as an imperative. If you do that, you're golden, because reality is nothing is better than aligned diversity in terms of a sustainable competitive advantage.
Yeah. And the type of culture you create around that is an amazingly powerful thing, because that's where the barriers happen. If you have a culture where you're more interested in everybody falling into place, it might work for a time, but it won't work forever. And so it's
that's
tough.
Right.
And you can't solve this problem overnight. And I think that's, and we need to be okay with that. I think what it is, people get discouraged and they back off. And so it's the idea is like people making changes that are small to be people who may be in power of holding on to those leadership positions that could possibly make bigger changes. Everyone needs to contribute. And it's never a solved problem. I wish it would be, but it's never. It's going to always happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly true for me when I'm on the road at conferences and I look around rooms, it's still a lot of gray-headed white guys. And, it just is. But this has to change, because these gray-headed white guys are all going to be retiring pretty soon. And there needs to be new infusions of talent and new sources of talent. For sure.
Yes. I mean, I agree. And I want to say this from a place of absolute deep love and respect. The number of gray-haired white guys who are actively doing something now. I'm pleased to say I've been approached by several different individuals. I've also seen individuals stand up and say, we have to change this. What can I do? And it literally the change starts at that point. That's it. And I love one of the things about Women in HPC that we started doing a couple years ago is having ally talks and having the gray haired white guy come in and sit and talk through their journey and bring people along with them so that they can hear it. And so, I mean, you guys are kind enough to give me a little platform here to spread that word about what women in HPC can do. But it's also the fact that, you know, attending these events and having allies and having representation and people willing to have tough discussions is how we move this needle forward.
There's such a wealth of really not just current, but also pioneering work mm-hmm. that were led by women, anything from chips to apps and in between. And gaining that wisdom, gaining that experience, that's so important. Can you speak to the impact of some of these events that you hold and the speakers that you manage to enlist and what you go through to get them to like really come out with it and not hold back?
culture of a safe space. We always say at the start of Women in HPC events that this is a space in which people are willing to change ideas. And sometimes we will talk about things which are uncomfortable, and that is okay. The speakers that we have had, let's just talk about what's coming up for ISC. So,
okay, great. Because
that's fresh in my head. So we have two invited speakers. So for the Solution Forum Takeover, we have it like set up in sections because it's the exhibition gala and people want to go see the vendors, which is great. But people also get tired or they want to eat or they want to hear something new and exciting. So what we do is a mixed agenda. And this is very like a very small microcosm of what a Women in HPC event is like. And so we have invited speakers, and we've got Ian Colley from AWS and Dr. Emma Barnes from the University of York. And both of them have really fascinating backgrounds, and they're willing to sit up and talk about that in the world of HPC. So even though Ian Colley is like now working at a gigantic public cloud provider, he's got an interesting background in government. He's got an interesting background working with training runners. So actually like marathons and all that other stuff that he can bring to the table that he's going to focus a bit more on in terms of where he's going to talk about being an ally in HPC. And then Dr. Emma Barnes, she is running what's known as the Viking system at the University of York. And her big focus, so she's got a physics background. She fell into HPC on accident, as she put it. And when she did so, she became really fascinated by what a system can do. And her focus for the past year has been on what they can do to drive towards net zero. So their system's now running on green, the green energy. Mm. She's got some awards that they just recently were announced as winners of for the Viking system, which was great. She's going to talk about that. And we balance these kind of like bigwig talks. And if they're listening in, I do consider them bigwigs against early career speakers who are going to talk about all the stuff they're on about. I think the one that's in my head is, of course, quantum. We love quantum in HPC. We have a couple of people talking about their work in quantum emulation and some of this like really cool theoretical stuff that's coming down the pipe. And so, so when you come to these events, you're going to get this like crazy mix of people talking about how they came into HPC, the lessons they've learned along the way. And then after that, they stand there and proudly represent and support people talking about the latest and greatest things, including, like I said, the stuff that we're going to see on the quantum emulation right there, all in the middle of an exhibition gala, which I think is cool.
That's excellent. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for folks interested in learning more about the organization who are going to be at ISC, I guess first steps would be check out today's announcement or your latest announcement on events and stop by your booth, I assume.
So womeninhpc.org is the site, just so you guys know. And we've got a blog with those events. We've got our supporters listed on there. We have an ice cream kiosk. ISC gave us an ice cream kiosk. So we're going to have like, get some ice cream, learn about Women in HPC. and we've got all the kind of stuff there. But if you head to womeninhpc.org and hit the blog, that'll be like the events coming up. You can also join Women in HPC for free. There's no fees involved. And when you do so, you can actually select a chapter or an affiliate to join. There are some insanely active chapters. We have Jiwin, the Mar chapter, and Australia and New Zealand will be sending representatives to give short talks on what they're up to at the ISC forum. So that's going to be cool. You can find out what's happening on the ground. So check it out.
That's perfect. So the assignment is look for women in HPC at ISC. Go look up the website and remember that it started out as women in HPC, but nowadays it's about general diversity, inclusion, underrepresentation of various groups, and it's just doing a lot of important and good things.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kristen.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Really, such an important thing to do. I'm delighted you're doing it. Thanks for your energy and for drive and making it all happen. Thanks for getting everybody to come and share their stories and feel safe about doing so. And yeah, you know, we can keep moving the needle until we don't have this problem anymore.
Let's hope. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
That's it for this episode of the At HPC podcast. Every episode is featured on InsideHPC.com and posted on OrionX.net. Use the comment section or tweet us with any questions or to propose topics of discussion. If you like the show, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The At HPC podcast is a production of OrionX in association with Inside HPC. Thank you for listening.